Hi, and welcome to another episode of Nexium on Trial, a Times Union podcast about the strange case of the purported self-help organization known as Nexium. I'm Times Union Editor-in-Chief Casey Seiler, and I'm happy once again to be joined by our criminal justice reporter, Rob Gavin. Rob, how you doing?
Doing good. Always good to be here.
So you were down in Brooklyn, of course, last week in July, for the sentencing of Lauren Salzman, who was a former Nexium insider, very close to Keith Raniere, the man known within Nexium as Vanguard, and by far the biggest malefactor in the Nexium prosecution. Lauren Salzman, however, walked out of that courtroom having received no prison time. Can you give us a little bit of background on who Lauren Salzman was, is, who she was to the prosecution, and why she walked out without any prison time?
Yes. Yeah, so Lauren Salzman is the daughter of Nancy Salzman, the Nexium co-founder. And Lauren was, in many ways, the perfect star witness for prosecutors, because Lauren had spent two decades, and she's 45, and the case was brought in 2018. So at that point, half her life in Nexium executive success programs. And she was someone who could walk prosecutors through the world of Nexium and not only give them information that they had heard and confirm it, but Lauren was also able to give them information they did not know. Lauren Salzman was not only someone who was on the executive side of Nexium as far as, you know, she was the director of education. So she was a Nexium executive, but Lauren was also a first line master in DOS. So she was someone who was really invaluable, someone that could talk about the doings of Keith Raniere, both as a leader in Nexium and as a leader in DOS. And she was also the daughter of Nancy Salzman. And she was sexually involved with Keith Raniere at times over that 20-year period. So she's really the star witness and someone who entered this organization through family, just out of college. And on another note, Lauren is also very local. I mean, a lot of people we talk about in Nexium are from California or they're from Mexico. Lauren is a 1994 graduate of Shen High School. So she's someone who is, she's very local, right from Clifton Park, and someone who was absolutely central to the government's case. And she delivered on all cylinders for the feds. And I'm not surprised. I don't think anyone should have been surprised that this was the sentence, because when you deliver for the feds, they will give you what they call 5K letter, a leniency. And the judge clearly was moved by Lauren's testimony, by her cooperation and her changes in her life to where she's now working with dogs. So she's definitely someone who was able to show the judge that she's turned the page.
What was the scene like in the courtroom in terms of the victims of Nexium and the victims of DOS, the organization, the secret sex cult, if you will, within the larger organization? I know that several victims of Nexium spoke. Were those victims satisfied with what the judge said was a story of at least limited redemption for Lauren Salzman?
I think if you were to speak to the victims of Nexium, I think the majority of them would tell you, you know, are they thrilled that Lauren Salzman got no jail time? They're probably not all thrilled about it, but I don't think any of them have a problem with it. And I think they understand it. The two victims who spoke, to give a little picture of the scene here, were Evie Navarez, who was a high-ranking member of Nexium, was a member of the organization for two decades and was a victim of Keith Raniere and Nexium, forced labor, among other the victimizations there. And Evie Navarez gave a very powerful speech to Lauren about how she had been her best friend and they were very close. And she describes her as now someone who, you know, had betrayed her trust and someone who had never apologized. And at one point she said that she felt she was kind of like a hostage negotiator. And that she said that she basically was someone brought into reason with her for Ranieri. This is someone who, in her view, could have stopped her forced labor and did not. So there was a lot of emotion there. And she was speaking on a pre-recorded audio. And then we heard Susan Dones, who was very harsh. In fact, she spoke about, she said, this is going to be the hardest one of these speeches that I give. And she was there in person and really talked about how she felt that Lauren had become entitled, that Lauren had really essentially helped Ranieri do the many things he did in her role, and was very critical of her, but also was okay with her not getting jail time when I spoke to her later. So, you know, there was sort of this harshness, but then also an acceptance that maybe if she's turned a corner, it's okay. Here's where it got a little bit even more interesting is that over to my left in court, there was a woman who did not speak in court. We haven't identified her, but she's the woman who was kept in a room in her parents' Knox Woods townhouse in Half Moon for almost 2 years. And the reason she was put there is because Keith Ranieri punished her because she kissed another man. And Keith Ranieri decided that this was an ethical breach. And that was the punishment. If you dare to show interest in another man, he would punish these women because he wanted total loyalty. Meanwhile, he was sleeping with more than 20 women and underage people as well.
Not an ethical breach in Keith Ranieri's estimation. That
basically. No, that was perfectly acceptable to Keith.
Yeah.
But that woman who was kept in the room and she gave powerful testimony at trial, I would say, you know, arguably the second most powerful witness, or, you know, after you had Lauren, you had this woman, you also had Mark Vicente. They were very powerful witnesses at trial. She was sitting in court next to Moira Penza, now in private practice, who was the lead prosecutor in the NXIVM trial. And you had a number of other people in court who were family, support, friends of different people in the case in court. To my right, it's sort of surreal. Like, to my left is another reporter. To my right is a guy named Eduardo Ansuzolo, who is a, to this day, current Ranieri loyalist. And he's sitting there in a suit. And I don't know how many people knew that there was an actual current supporter of NXIVM still all in the courtroom. And then in front of me, you had Lauren's father. He was there, I believe, with his wife and other family members and supporters of Lauren. At the end of court, when the sentence was there, Lauren gave hugs to her family and she gave hugs to the prosecutors and she seemed very relieved. It was a pretty packed courtroom, was a pretty emotional courtroom. Lauren made it clear in her that she spoke for a while. This was not one of these situations where a defendant is sentenced and the person just says a couple of words. Lauren spoke for a good while and she had also written a letter earlier to the judge. So. And she apologized to both Susan Dones and Evie Navarez. It was a, I would say, very emotional atmosphere.
You noted in your Law Beat column that appeared just a couple of days after the sentencing that her contrition aside, her lawyers made the case in one of their recent filings that she has effectively, you know, suffered a great deal as a result of being prosecuted and pleading guilty to these federal charges, but that she had also been subjected to hit pieces that labeled her as a member of a sex cult, as her lawyers put it, and that that essentially was a form of punishment that she had already been subjected to. It is true when people do bad things and when those bad things are reported, it no doubt is not very agreeable to be in the news. But at the same time, we are talking about serious crimes and having been part of an organization that victimized women for a good long time.
As far as their comments, and they had written that, you know, they said, though Lauren was not charged with or convicted of any sex-related offenses, she has faced a social stigma because of the extensive media attention garnered by NXIVM that labeled her a member of a sex cult. And if you look at the defense memo, there's also parts of there where they say that the press had, quote unquote, caused harm to co-defendants. I mean, it's I found this, given the history of the case in Nexium, which we all know came to light only after reporting. We had the New York Times article, obviously, on the branding, and the Times Union had written for years about Nexium. There was also a lot of other just reporting out there for years of others, some other people who were in there. The thing that's the I found ironic about this is the press and these reporters who had done such a good job over the years of exposing Nexium were on Keith Raniere's enemies list. So here was, we have Lauren Salzman, who really looks, by all accounts, has turned herself around and is no longer doing anything Nexium-like. And yet her attorneys are still like pushing this, hey, the press is making a big deal about this. And what I found really interesting is that the judge said in his comments Wednesday at the sentencing, the judge used the term Nexium sex cult. And, you know, I'll be honest, it's not a term I've used all that much. I mean, I think it's a term I'm sure I may have used it once or twice. I'm sure some people have used it across the media. But Lauren Salzman was a member of DOS. She was a first line master in DOS. You know, we had a California salesman who sold bondage devices at this trial. There were parts of this trial where I think a lot of jaws were dropping.
It is a reminder that within an organization like this, the line between perpetrator, victim, and accomplice, I guess that would be two lines, can be rather blurry at times. In other words, a lot of the women, Lauren Salzman included, who were victimized within this organization also turned out to be victimizers as well. Same for Allison Mack. But you mentioned the judges. Comments. I want to also draw attention to the judge's remarks that it was, quote, not comprehensible to this court, unquote, that the case was tried in Brooklyn, which is the Eastern District of New York in terms of your U.S. attorneys and federal justice, as opposed to the Northern District that includes the Capital Regional and a large swath of upstate, even though the judge said state and federal authorities here in Albany were aware of what he referred to as illegality and abuses. Judge Garofas, Nicholas Garofas, went on to say, how in the world this went on for so many years in Albany, New York, and its environs will forever be a sad mystery to this court. And to the point made by Lauren Salzman's attorneys, look, the reason why the Times Union wrote stories about Nexium for years in part, is because no one or virtually no one in law enforcement did anything about Nexium. In other words, we would have stopped writing stories about Nexium if anybody had done their job in terms of law enforcement. And I'm talking about people at the state and federal level that might have brought this organization to justice a little bit earlier and headed off the considerable suffering experienced by the women who were victimized by Nexium on down through the years, Lauren Salzman included. So I guess I'm sorry if I'm getting on a bit of a soapbox there, but the notion that the media is to blame for victimizing anybody sticks in my craw just a little bit. So.
No, I mean, it's really kind of amazing. And when you mentioned the lack of action in the Northern District, we did a story several months ago where Sarah Edmondson told us she went to the FBI in Albany, told them women were going to be, told them the address, the time, there's going to be brandings at this place, and nothing happened. And that's not the only story of that. There's cases involving several other past members of Nexium where they really put themselves on the line and then nothing happened. And you know, what we've said before, and I think it's really scary, is you look at the Secrets of Nexium series, which the TU did 2012. And I think anybody who looked at that series would think, oh, wow, well, there's probably going to be some sort of law enforcement action after this, or wow, you couldn't imagine that this is not going to be answered up. And as we all know, NXIVM just got more emboldened. They got, the only way to say it is they got worse. You had DOS, you had Ranieri just dug in, and it's like, maybe he felt, well, look, I nothing's happened to me now. I'm just going to continue to push it and push it. And yeah, he had really no reason to believe that he would be stopped based on two decades of inaction. And that's not something I think law enforcement in the Albany area necessarily wants to hear. I don't think they necessarily like that. They may say they didn't know about this or they didn't know about that. It's pretty clear what was out there for years and years and years. And the fact is nothing happened. And obviously now we look back, and I think for the judge to make those comments says a lot. I think the fact that we've said it, I think many people who've covered the case have said it, observers have said it, but this is now a federal judge saying it. This is a senior federal judge who presided over the trial. So for Judge Garifas to say it, that speaks volumes to many people. And a lot of people, including I asked some law enforcement people up here who had been here at the time, if they wanted to comment. And in general, they just don't want to. It's usually, oh, why don't you talk to this person? Or I don't want to talk about that. Why don't you talk to maybe someone who's only been here a year or so? Because it's not a comfortable conversation to have, I guess, if you were here at the time in a law enforcement capacity and you know nothing happened. And the reason it just begs itself about is just why? Why? And on a larger scale, it's not even just this case. We've had big political cases, the Prococo case, the Calleros case, tried in the Southern District. So, I mean, obviously, you know, the Northern District of New York is where this case took place, other than the reasons why it was in Brooklyn. And if anybody is wondering why it was in Brooklyn, how it could be in Brooklyn, it's the fact that there were planes involved in the crimes of NXIVM that flew into JFK, which is in Queens, which is in the Eastern District, and DOS operated in Brooklyn, as well as Albany. That's why the case is in Brooklyn. But there's many guilty pleas in this case. There's many parts of this case where they had to waive, you know, make an adjustment of jurisdiction because the jurisdiction is here. In the closing argument, Moira Penza made for the federal prosecution in this case, she opened it up talking about Knox Woods, which is in Half Moon, which is in the Capital Region. That was the center of the NXIVM universe and where most of the stuff happened in this case. So this is always going to be a case that's going to unfortunately be associated with the Albany area. And the reality is that if law enforcement acted earlier, one could make the case. We wouldn't have had a DOS, but we'll never know.
Rob, looking ahead as we wind up, what's next? Nancy Salzman, Lauren Salzman's mother, is the next defendant to be sentenced. And after that, it's Kathy Russell, who among the defendants, I think it's fair to say, was kind of the most minor figure, essentially a bookkeeper within NXIVM. And then that's it. This case will effectively have wrapped up, right?
Correct. Assuming there's no successful appeal by Keith Ranieri. But the Nancy Salzman sentencing coming up on September 8th, is going to be one that, once again, I think people are going to probably be expecting maybe a longer sentence than what we're going to actually see. Is she going to get no jail time? I don't know that I would say that. I wouldn't say one way or the other at this point, but it's obvious that she's made it clear in the letter that Nancy Salzman wrote to the judge on behalf of her daughter. Nancy Salzman said that she is the person that suggested her daughter cooperate. And I think as we get closer to the sentencing, I think you're going to hear more and more about what Nancy Salzman did to cooperate in this case. I would not be expecting a significant jail sentence for Nancy Salzman, because I do think there was cooperation there. I think we'll find out some things that maybe we didn't know. But I also think that it's a little bit more of a mystery. It's not as cut and dry as it was with Lauren. And I also feel that there'll be probably a more victim impact statements here, because look, this is the co-founder. this is Nancy Salzman. This was the public face of NXIVM. The term figurehead was used at one point. And obviously Keith Raniere ran NXIVM, no question. But she was the other person up there who had the name. She was known within NXIVM as the prefect. This is going to be fascinating to see how this goes. The judge recently rejected Nancy's request to visit her daughter. She wanted to be with her daughter, Michelle, who was giving birth, has been expecting, you know, her first child, and wanted to be able to spend some time with her. And the judge did not allow her to do that.
Well, Rob, thanks again. We really appreciate it. And thanks to all who have listened to this episode of NXIVM on Trial, a Times Union podcast. Please tune in later for more developments in the strange case of the organization known as NXIVM. Please remember that the Times Union's journalism is supported by its subscribers. I'm Casey Seiler. Thanks for listening, and please check back for more developments in the weeks to come.
If you're enjoying NXIVM on Trial, be sure to check out its sister podcast, The Eagle. I'm Jessica Marshall, host of The Eagle. Each week, we'll take a look inside the newsroom at the Times Union, the Capital Region's oldest and largest newspaper. We'll discuss the week's top stories, and we'll talk to the award-winning reporters who write them. Listen at timesunion.com or wherever you get your podcasts.